Hello
and welcome to another episode of Just Say Effort, where today, for the first time ever, we have a guest.
Hello.
Hello. That is a guy called Lewis Parkinson, who is not only one of my very good slash best friends.
One of.
The best friend. Also is the co-founder of Project Mood. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, nice. Today, we brought on Lewis because Lewis is well-versed in the fitness world and has worked within the fitness scape for quite a while through different gyms and has obviously set his own up. But he also is well-versed in the contrast therapy world for recovery.
Before we get into any of that, though, my first question is, I believe that you're doing this ultra on Saturday with Tom.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. How are you feeling? How's your preparation been?
Well, say I'm doing it with Tom. Tom's doing the half. I'm doing the full. And so it's 100 kilometres. It's the Surf Coast Century. We leave from Anglesey on Saturday morning. We do 100K and it's a mixture of coastal, forest, trail runs, the full works. It was booked on a bit of a whim, actually. We booked it 3 weeks ago. I'm not injury-free. I'm not the best runner, but as I'm sure we'll get into, I love resilience. You know, that's my train. That's my love language. We'll see what happens. It's going to be a long day. It's going to hurt. But I'm very, very excited for it.
I just want to highlight something on that is he says it was booked on a whim. We've been planning this for a while.
The 50 was planned. The 100 was not.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, you betrayed me.
So you mentioned it's on a variety of different terrains. Have you had a plan like to train on different terrains and do you have a coach? Like how's your training been like programmed in the lead up?
So I know that this is wrong, but this is the way my brain works is I don't like having a coach because it takes the fun out of it for me. This is my hobby and I do it when I'm free to do it and I do it on my own terms. And I also do it, a lot of it is done through gut feel as well. So this whole training plan has been how I feel when and how busy I am at that time. And, you know, so to answer your question, I'm raw dogging it really, just sort of going off gut feel. And I'm not having a coach. I'm not against the idea of it. I just think, you know, it's like, you know, when you, I like cooking, right? I enjoy cooking. But if I became a chef and I was paid to cook, I think I wouldn't enjoy it anymore. It just changes the dynamic of it all of a sudden. I think that's where I'm coming from. I don't want to put too much pressure on it, and I just want to go with the flow. So, it's more of an internal thing for me that I just want to train myself and get it done.
Yeah, I reckon that's a really interesting point that you raised there because you know I always definitely recommend that if someone's going to do something new, especially like an ultra race, having the guidance of a coach or someone who's done it before is absolutely crucial. But I really like the point that you're raising is that it makes it a little bit more stressful. And I think that a lot of people can, you know, find themselves training for a big event, a marathon or something, and they'll have particular paces that they feel like they have to hit in training sessions and they'll have to, and they have, you know, certain points that they have to reach in order to have that confidence. And I think sometimes the stress can actually build up and make it like not just less enjoyable. And like the whole point of doing it is to, you know, push yourself, enjoy yourself. And see what you can do. But in order, by creating that extra stress of feeling obligated to fulfill your training, your training sessions, sometimes it can actually cause unnecessary pressure.
Well, exactly. And I'm sure we'll get into this as well. But, you know, I've been in the fitness industry for 12, 13 years. And one thing that is really apparent is the pressure that people put on themselves. And you think you're doing a good thing by setting these big, lofty targets or setting these goals, but actually you're setting yourself up for failure, you know, and just going easy on yourself is a really powerful thing and micro goals and being 1% better every day. And I think that's sort of where my view is on me personally having a coach is that it's such a commitment, you know, I mean, running 100K is a commitment, but when there's someone there who you're paying, who's like, you know, what was your average heart rate today? I was like, I can't, you know, I just want to run. I just want to enjoy myself. You know, that's where I'm at with it.
I mean, you do say this, but I would say I semi coach you.
Yeah, that's true. Especially on
classic Tom taking the credit.
I can't deny it. To be fair,
he hops on my plan.
To be fair, I do. I will occasionally join you for a track session. You know, fine, whatever. But you know, when we do like a Ironman, you are literally my swim coach.
Yeah.
So I'll give you that.
Yeah. Although that went well for you and not well for me. So
that's true.
But I will say that I think the reason why that didn't go well for me, and it was something you just touched on there, is the whole part about putting pressure on yourself. Because we covered this in our last episode, which was, I always find that when I put too much pressure on myself, I'll have a bad race. And when I just go, do you know what? I'm just going to go out there and have some fun and see what happens. And I don't put a time on it and I just sort of go with the flow, I always have a better race.
That's it. It's literally just not that deep. And you put it out on social media and you get everyone around it and you can't sleep the night before. That's not enjoyable. It's not an enjoyable thing. No. I think that, you know, fitness is about feeling good and it's about hobbies and a bit of time away from, it's like escapism in a way. It's getting away from the day to day and doing, just enjoying yourself. And I really think that the message is important of just relax into it, you know, breathe into it. And I think when you take less pressure off, it's much more enjoyable and you perform a lot better.
For sure. And also I'm going to say as well, just in from a coaching perspective too, like that's why it's super important to make sure that you don't just get a coach that somebody else says is amazing. You got to get one that's like suitable for you. Because if you've got a coach that's asking you about, you know, your heart rates and different zones and all that kind of stuff, that is not the coach for Lewis. Like you need someone who's going to be like just like chilled and just be like, okay, well, today's run, you've got to get between, you know, maybe this mileage or whatever. Or maybe not even set the days for the sessions. It's just going to be, you've got to get 3-4 runs, whatever it is in a week. I think it's really important that just because a coaching system works for somebody else doesn't necessarily mean it's for you.
Yeah, you know what I need? You know, like with kids when you you hide vegetables in their food.
Yeah.
I need that with a coach. I need to be coached, but not knowing that I'm being coached, you know, like.
But that is the essence of coaching, is to literally trick people into running without realizing that they're doing it. But like creating, I guess, like, you know, if you're creating a run group, you create a social environment that people just want to keep turning up to. Mm. And they come for the social aspect and then they just happen to be running and they accidentally get fit without realizing it, like hiding the vegetables in the food.
Yeah. Well, a question for you in terms of running and if you're getting into it, could you say that it's a slight barrier for entry if you have to go and hire a coach? Could it, because in my mind it's like, it's just lace up and run, you know, it's like and the beauty of running that it is so accessible that anyone can just do it. I wonder whether the coaching side of things is like, it becomes a bit of a barrier sometimes, like people think that they need a coach. Because actually, you probably don't need a coach a lot of the time unless you're doing something crazy.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the person. So, for example, if you're struggling, I mean, people have coaches for different reasons. Some people have a coach just as a source of motivation, just to help keep them accountable. So, I mean, that's one reason. Other people would just go to a run club for that. But if you're somebody that's maybe struggling with injuries or you are wanting to train for like your first ultra, but you need help with managing the load because you can't just keep like ramping it up. And at the same time, you can't just keep going for easy runs and expect to be getting a good result. Like, you know, you can be so much more strategic and get more out of your body for less, essentially, if you've got someone that's carefully planning it. But I mean, there's plenty of different, even like online resources there that you can just get like generic kind of stuff. It can work for some people, but I think, you know, if you want something that's actually going to be like tailored to you and, I mean, we're all about consistency and, you know, consistently turning up, you know, with whatever your fitness goal is. But if you've got something that's, you know, you've got like a couple of weeks of like really intense workload or something, like a generic training program is not going to, that's not going to like give you any options for that. So then if you miss 2 weeks of training, then all of a sudden you've ramped up 20Ks and you're long, whatever it is, it's not suited to you. So the benefit of having a coach is that like, all right, if you are actually struggling with the interval session, you can break it down with volume, intensity, whatever it is. If you've got a stressful week or, you know, busy time with kids or whatever it is, the loads can be managed so it's actually suiting you and then you're not going to get injured, you're not going to break. I mean, I think it's beneficial for everyone, but it's not necessary to be getting started.
Hmm. Yeah,
I would say that you are slightly different to most people that I've met on this front, though, because you are, and I can't believe I'm saying this on record, a bit more naturally gifted.
Wow.
When, and the reason why I say this, no, I can't believe I'm saying this, is because I've never known somebody, like, for example, that Ironman we did, your swim training, you started 3 weeks before the thing and the event, and you hated swimming. And watching you swim, I was like, that guy's dying before he gets on the bike. It's like, there is no way he's making it. Anyway, you did. In fact, you absolutely smashed me on that.
And, oh, thank you.
And the other thing with you is that you are you definitely prefer going your own way. And also the other thing about you is that you are, if the going gets tough, you get going.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is I think a therapist could explain this probably better than I can. But there is something so internal when it comes to this hard stuff. Like, I did the Brighton Beach Marathon the other weekend, and I didn't, I'm really sorry to Brighton Beach Marathon, but I didn't have time to buy the ticket. So I didn't, and I just jumped on the track and I'd ran it and did the full marathon and finished it across the finish line. And I didn't get a medal because I didn't have a ticket, and I just finished it and went home. And I was like, oh, that was pretty cool, actually. I quite like that, because I'm not doing it for the medal. I'm not doing it for the applause. I'm not doing it for anything else. I'm doing it because it's like I'm trying to prove myself to myself. Like, I love that. Love the resilience side of it. You know, it's like, it's the same with anything that's long distance or anything that's hard, I guess. It's like, it's a challenge, and there's something just so like invigorating about it.
Would you consider yourself a competitive person?
Probably, but not as much as you'd think. You know, I don't. I rarely, for example, I would talk about running a lot. I'd run a lot, but I'm not like the fastest runner. So I see someone runs faster than I do, and I don't get annoyed at that. You know, so a lot of it is okay. I think maybe a bit competitive in terms of like business stuff, fitness wise. Actually, okay, my answer to this is, as I've got older, I've become less competitive because I've become more secure in my ability. I think younger me was probably a bit more competitive because it was probably some kind of insecurity.
Yeah, there's a part of what you're saying. The reason why I'm asking this is because I think something that a lot of people tend to struggle with is like feeling competitive against other people, or like, I guess, like that measurement or comparison sort of aspect. And I think I like the way that you're just, you know, you're obviously like super competitive against yourself because you want to see what you can do and you want to see where the barriers are. But I think that that's a really important trait, especially like if you're like lining up for a race or for anything, you're just focusing on yourself and just being like, I'm excited to see what I can actually do. And, you know, getting like curious about that rather than thinking like, oh, I hope these people aren't going to beat me or whatever it is. But I think that's setting yourself up for a really good mentality, like anything that you do, which takes the pressure off. And I think that comes back to what we were talking about before with, you know, not being overly stressed lining up for a race because you feel like you have to be performing or whatever. It's just like, all right, I'm here. I'm on the start line. Let's see what I got.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing that I struggle to put into words, because it's like, as I said, it's so internal that the stress is there, but it's during the event, it's not before the event. So I will always like attach a stressful period of my life to an event. So for example, like the last Ironman we did in Australia was I booked it I think a month after I broke up with my ex-girlfriend. So the training, everything leading up to it was like, I was going really hard. I was going really, really hard. But internally, I was just getting over the breakup. You know, that was how I dealt with that. And then when I finished the race, obviously I thought about it during the race. I was like, look how far you've gone. You know, look at the progress you've made. Look at who you are. You know, you're not dependent on anyone else. You've done it, especially with the whole drama of being in a different country and blah, blah, blah. It's quite a stressful period of my life. And then when you cross the finish line, the emotion is like, fuck, done, finished. Like, you've won. You've literally overcome it. Draw a line, move on, and that's it. And it's the same with the Brighton Beach Marathon last weekend. I was thinking about it. You know, been a bit stressed at work recently. Think about that stuff. Cross the finish line, and it's done. You then leave it in the past, and it's quite a nice way of dealing with life stresses, but also a way of motivating and pushing yourself to get stuff done. You know.
Yeah, I really like that. And I'm sure you're doing like plenty of hours of training probably by yourself as well. And it's a really good time for you to actually be like reflecting upon anything that you might be stressed about. And I really love that you have then it's almost like, all right, this is the finish line. And then that's where you draw the line. Don't think about it anymore. Don't dwell on it. It's done. Put it in the past. I like that. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. In fact, Lewis gave me that tip when I had a pitch, our first ever pitch night for Effit. And I was really nervous about it. I had quite a lot going on and I was very, very stressed about certain things going on in my personal life. And then Lewis said, just attach it to this. And then I went, I did the podcast, not the podcast, I did the pitch night and then it was gone. It was great. Thank you.
Yeah, it's powerful. It's really powerful. You attach a period of your life to a task, and once the task is done, the event is like it's minuscule. You know, you almost minimize the importance of it.
Would you say that resilience that you've built and carved out for yourself, would you say that that's helped you in normal life?
100%.
And in what way?
Well, I think talking very broadly, I think if you do hard things, everything becomes easy, and if you do easy things, everything becomes hard. And I've stolen that quote, so don't think I'm sounding really intelligent. But that's the truth of it, is that the more hard shit you do, the higher your tolerance level becomes. And so, you know, if you go out and run, everyone's heart is very different. So, you know, don't worry too much on the distance, for example. But if you run a run that's hard for you, if it's 10K before work, you then go into work and someone says something to you that you don't like, I guarantee that you're going to brush it off so much more than if you had a lion that morning. It's just simple resilience. And resilience, whether it's fitness, whether it's putting yourself in hard situations, you know, risky situations, you might be out of your comfort zone in a financial sense, in a relationship sense, in a friendship. You know, it can even be as much as like having a hard conversation with a friend over the phone that you've not been wanting to have. That's resilience in the same way as running on a treadmill is resilience. And it's just like a muscle, you know, the more bicep curls you do, the stronger your biceps get, the more resilient you are, the more resilient you become. It is literally as simple as that. So I think on the whole, by doing this, you know, these long distance things that are really sort of, they are hard, and they, you know, during them you feel traumatized, genuinely traumatized. They're fucking hard work, but you finish them and you look at all the other problems you have in your life and it's like pretty minuscule actually. You know, and then when, you know, once you recover, you, a couple months down the line, you go on a run, you're doing a 10K and you remember, I've done much more than this before. I've proved, I know what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
It gives you a huge sense of like self-confidence as well in moving forward with stuff. So yeah, I think massively.
I found with that, I've always been a pretty relaxed person, pretty much laid back the whole time. But I found that when I could get stressed about quite a lot of things. And then I found that when I started doing like ultra endurance events, that nothing is as hard as that, sort of pain wise, and the fact that you're pushing yourself through it and you can stop at any point. Like there's, although it never enters your mind, you're like, oh, I've got to get to this finish line, but you can exit at any time. And you never really think about that, which I always find interesting. But the amount of stress that your body goes through and that your mind goes through, and you know, you've been there for one of them where it really went wrong. After that, there's so much that doesn't seem stressful to me that I only notice that I'm stressed when real shit is hitting the fan. It's at that point when I go, oh no, I am stressed. Up until that, I don't have any relation to if it's stress or not.
Yeah. Well, because stress is interesting, isn't it? Because it's a lot of people, including the old me, would think of stress as like as a weakness or as, you know, oh, I'm flapping, I'm stressed. It's not that. Stress comes out in so many different ways. It's just high cortisol. It's like you can be lacking in sleep. You can be, you know, your appetite could be gone. You could be a little bit grouchy. You could also be oversleeping with stress. Like there's so many different ways of analyzing it or interpreting it in yourself.
Yeah.
That it's you think that you have this resilient mind and you're not, everyone gets, you know, I used to say I don't get stressed. Of course I do. Everyone does. Yeah. But I think these are really good ways of dealing with that, as well as like the non-physical side of things as well, like breath work, meditation, these things. They're much less hard on the body than doing 100K ultra.
the same
stuff. It's stress management, and it's going internal, and it's being present. And I find that stuff really helpful as well.
And a question for you, actually, because obviously our listeners don't know that you used to be a little fat boy at one point. and I would, on that, I think something that's really important to know is obviously doing, you know, ultras, you've done Ironmans now, but you weren't that. You once showed me a picture that definitely showed me you weren't that. What was your moment that got you into exercising more? And then what was the moment that made you sort of click to, I like, maybe first of all, I am fit, and second of all, I just feel like I'm going to enter an ultra endurance event.
Well, so it was probably like, was it probably 2016, 2017? I was, as you say, a big boy. What's interesting is at that time, I was so confident in myself. I did not see a fat dude in the mirror, but I look at photos now and I see a fat dude. But it's fine, you know, at the time, and, you know, I was like, I'm fine. I genuinely remember thinking that it was insecure people who exercised because I was like, why are you trying to lose weight? Why? Oh, you're vain. You're in the gym because you're vain. I didn't get it. And at the time, I was I'd left my my job for a couple of years to start my own business, and the business actually did really well. And I had a I was living with this girlfriend at the time, and I remember, like, I was like, I thought I was killing it with the business. I was so confident in myself. I didn't need to exercise. And I was in this long-term relationship. And then after a little bit of time, I started realizing, actually, I'm pretty unfulfilled right now. I'm sat on my own all day. While the money was good, I was just miserable. And I'd just buy stuff because I was bored. And during the day, I had all the time in my hands, but everyone else is at work. You start boozing a lot. Generally just quite unhappy. And then I remember getting to a point where I was very unhappy, and I knowing that I needed to make some changes. So what happened was I the girlfriend and I broke up. I closed that business down, and there was some other like personal stuff that, you know, needed addressing, and it all got done. And after that was all done, you feel this sense of like grief, because everything's changed all of a sudden, and it was change that really freaked me out. And honestly, the only thing that made me feel better was exercise. And I used to work for a company called One Rebel in the UK, and we had fitness studios, and so I just go and do a spin class, you know, amazing music, amazing instructors, and you just have a bit of a vibe in the class, and I come out of it and get that endorphin rush, and I'm like, I don't feel depressed right now, I feel happy. So I started doing that, and it was really the only thing that made me feel good. And over time, as I said, I was pretty secure in myself. I didn't feel like I needed to lose any weight, even though I did. And but the weight starts piling off, and then people start saying, oh, you've lost so much weight, and you don't really realize it. And then before you know it, it was gone. And so what was quite interesting about it was never like a case of I'm overweight, I need to get fit. It was actually, I was just in a pretty bad place mentally, and exercise was my way of feeling good again. And the weight loss was actually just a side effect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. When was the moment that you decided to go into, in fact, that, you know, the interesting part about that is that, especially with me, because, you know, I went through my ups and downs of weight loss. I found that when I really focused on it and I was really worried about how much weight I was losing, was the moment, I would say, is the most, is the least I've lost weight, is when I've really been focusing on, because then all you're focusing on is like, oh, your macros. And then it's like, it's as if it's like the number one thing on your mind at all times. So then you're like, don't eat the cake, don't eat the cake, eat the cake, eat the cake. Don't eat the cake. Definitely eat the cake. Okay, I'm going to eat the cake. But I won't eat the cake tomorrow. And that sort of was a, but whenever I changed the way my exercise was to, for it to be purposeful and like, you know, for performance, then I've lost weight. And it's the secondary, but the result will come because I'm focused on the other stuff.
100%. And I love this. I love this sort of a way of thinking, because it's like, it's the why, isn't it? It's the why. What is your why? And when you assign a reason to a task, whether it's like a business, you know, a lot of people will be like, I want to start a business because I want to make a load of money. That's not good enough. It's not strong enough. It's not a reason why.
Yeah.
The money is a result. It's not a reason. And it's the same with training, I think. You can't train just to lose weight, because losing weight, it's for vanity. It's not going to last. It's temporary. It's just bullshit. So if your why is something more important, if your why is that I want to be strong so I can, you know, I can still, I don't know, you might be like, I want to lift my grandkids up. You know, I want to be able to reach the top shelf. I want to be able to not get injured when I close the car door. You know, these small things, you're assigning reasons to the task, and it's such a bigger motivator. And I think if you can assign something important to the reason why you train, the results will take care of themselves.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Actually, a question for you, Lissy. What's your why? Have you got, like, you've been training and exercising for so long, to an incredible elite level. Like, do you have a why for doing it, or is it just like you just enjoy doing it?
I don't enjoy doing it. not like week in, week out, like running up to like 120 Ks a week. It's hard, and having to, you know, get up, work full time and like cram in the training all around, you know, all the other commitments. And that, like, my why has like fluctuated a lot and changed over the years. And I think it's something that I've had to come back to quite often, because I like several times along, I mean, I represented Australia the first time when I was 17. There's been like 11 times. Most recently was last year. Like it's been like 17 years of doing this. And I've had so many periods where I've just been like, I don't want to do this. Why am I even doing it? I feel like I can't even do it anymore. And then each time, to be honest, I just come back to the reason why I started. And that was, I love the social aspect. I love the community, and I love doing it with other people. And when I keep coming back to that, that's what I find gets the most out of myself. When I'm like trying to be like really strict and like, you have to reach 130 Ks a week, you have to, you know, hit whatever metrics that you assign to yourself to be important, that I've never been successful when I've done that. I've been very successful when I have had a really great community around me, and I keep showing up because, you know, for the reasons that I love it. And I do it to see, I'm excited to see what I can do. And I think all of the challenges that I set myself, it's because I'm excited to see what I can do. But the training is obviously hard. So you need to be, actually, as cliche as it sounds, you need to be enjoying the process. And so for me, that is doing it with mates, community, and having a team that you know, you're not doing it alone.
Yeah. Yeah, I just never asked you that question before.
But it's something that's definitely plagued me over the years. And so many times I've really not enjoyed it, because, you know, when you're tired and, you know, you're exhausted and you don't really have anything that's sort of inspiring you, the last thing you want to do is like get out, especially in the middle of winter, and do a solo 14K run or something on an easy day. To me, it's the easy training days have always been, you know, the harder session days, because you're doing it with other people. And the most challenging days for me are the easy runs, because I'm often doing it solo. But yeah, it's definitely something that's troubled me a lot over the years.
I feel like a lot of people look at the actual the event that you're training for, that when you do it and you hold the medal, be like, wow, that must have been so hard. But actually, it's the lead up to it's the process of the lead up to that, isn't it? It's like the race day is a celebration of all the training that you've done.
Yeah,
that's the easy part.
Yeah, exactly. The race is like where the adrenaline comes in. It just flies by. And I think there's
some of the time.
Jimmy Carr said it's not the pursuit of happiness. It's happiness in the pursuit.
Yeah.
You know? And I love that, because it is so relevant, isn't it? You have to just, if you enjoy the process, you will you know, that's everything. The process is everything, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, because it's like, you know, people say it, sounds cliche, and we go, oh, whatever, but it's actually so true. And I think that if you're not, you know, if you're turning up and doing the training just because you feel like it's an obligation, because your coach said it, or because you feel like you have to, you're not enjoying it. What's the point? Like, you're just going to be sort of hitting your head against a brick wall. And I've been in that situation, I think, Like when I first moved to South Yarra and I didn't have a training group, and I would do all my sessions by myself. And, you know, it's so hard to get the motivation to, first of all, get out the door. And then also you have to motivate yourself to push yourself really hard when you're trying to run fast solo. And so for me, it's always just been like, nah, get a community and do it with people, because then all you have to do is just turn up to the training session. And, you know, the energy of the group is always, you know, drags you along.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we train quite a lot together, don't we? And then whenever you're like, I can't do the run on Tuesday and I have to go do it by myself. Bleak.
Well, do you not like...
Sometimes, no, I love it. I enjoy solo. What's very odd is I did most of my training prior to us training together. Most of it was done solo, apart from the long bike rides with my mate Tom. But other than that, it was all solo. Really, the first few times that I'd run properly with people was when we did a run together, and then also when we did Happy Feet.
Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I was solo.
Mm.
And then I got used to running and chatting, and it would just fly by. And then, my mind switched on it.
You need a mix, don't you? I think. You need a mix. I think you need a mix of, even when you do run solo as well, I think you need a mix of not running with your headphones in. I think you need to know you need that ability of, you know, just being in the zone. It's very Goggins of me to say, but the headphones are not always going to be there. You know, you are going to need to like lock in sometimes. And I love, you go for a run before work, you catch up with your mates. There's nothing better. You go to work, you're just in a good mood.
Yeah, I do agree with you though. It's like running solo without music, or even just music that you're not even really paying attention to. It's actually really great because it puts you in kind of like a meditative state. And I know before, you know, if I'm going to teach, going for a run before school is a really helpful way for me to just be like, because I'm chronic, like leave it to the last minute. So I allow myself 10 minutes to have a shower, have breakfast and get ready for school and leave. So nothing like cutting it fine. So for me, the run is actually about working out, okay, what am I going to wear? What socks, shoes, underwear, like all of it. What am I going to prioritize first? I'm going to put the kettle on and then I'm going to go have the shower by the time the kettle boils and, you know, these sorts of things. And so I actually think it's really nice just being like, I don't know, like sort of planning and centering yourself, I think, before the day as well.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I do not think about those things when I'm running.
It doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
I do not think, right, when I get home, I need to put the kettle on. What am I going to wear today? Like, well, I don't think of anything.
I don't think you have the same time pressures, perhaps, trying to get ready in 10 minutes. I do that to myself.
He does leave everything to the last minute, though.
I do. Yeah, we're very similar on that front. It's true.
But just talking about the, I guess, like the whole meditation kind of thing, and you mentioned breath work before. So can you tell us a bit about that? Have you done breath work or like, what's your experience in that?
So breath work I've been doing for on and off. I'm not religious with it, but I do love it. But I found it like 2 years ago. And when I found it, I was like, this thing is amazing. I was like, this is a hack to life that no one knows about. So I did it every day for like 3 months, and I just did a 10-minute Wim Hof video, and I went to a couple of studios in Melbourne and did it in person as well, which was also amazing. I love both ways of doing it, and it was the only real sort of thing that forced me to put my phone down, don't be connected to anything else, no distraction. The breath work was good because you have to focus on your breath. A lot of people find meditation difficult because they can't stay focused. You know, everyone has ADHD these days, right? And it's a lot of people. I've just started meditating the past like month, and a lot of people I talk to are like, I can't do that because I can't focus on it. Breath work is good for those people because you have to focus on the breath. It's something to actually concentrate on, and it's essentially the same. And when you do these big sort of deep breaths, you do like 30 big inhale exhales. You'll exhale, you hold for a minute. And then you'll breathe in and hold again 15 seconds. And you do that 3 times. That's the 10-minute video that I do with Wim Hof. You come out of it and you'll get tingles in your head. Your hands and feet will start tingling. Your mouth feels all weird, but you feel, it's almost like this euphoria. You feel high. And then once it sort of settles down, you just have this calmness about you, this zen, this really relaxed feeling. And it's really good for stress management. If you're going through any type of stress, it's really good for concentration. You do it if you about to go on, like go and do some public speaking, or if you're about to like host, like do a big meeting or anything like that. You think really clearly with it. And I think that breath deep in and out, it's almost similar to what you do when you exercise. And it's the same, you know, you finish a run, you feel quite sort of, you have a bit of a calmness about you, a bit of a zen. I think it's the same thing. And I think it's probably something to do with the amount of oxygen you're getting in and out. And then the meditation, it's kind of similar to what you were saying with the runs, is that you the way I describe it is like, imagine a desk that's just got papers and shit everywhere and disorganized. That's what it looks like before I close my eyes. And then I do the 15-minute meditation. I open it and it's all neatly organized into folders, and I know where everything is and I can think clearly. And, you know, my to-do list all of a sudden just seems manageable. And, you know, I've always liked the idea of it, but I've never really committed to it. And, you know, some of the most successful business people or athletes, they all meditate. And so I was like, well, there must be something there. And I've been doing it for a month every day. And, I'm at the moment, I'm fully in, like I'm similar to how I was with breath work in the beginning. So I want to stay consistent with it, but I'd recommend it to anyone. It's amazing. I'd go as far to say it has changed. It's changed the way it's changed my personality, I think. I genuinely think so. It's really calmed me down.
That's so interesting. I think you articulated it so well, because that's exactly how I see it, is that everything is scattered and floating around in your brain, and then you like compartmentalize it off into different sections. And then it's like, okay, everything's like neatly where it needs to be, and now I can get on with my day.
Exactly.
So how much time do you dedicate to this every day?
So 15 minutes.
Only 15 minutes?
I just do a YouTube 15 minutes guided meditation. And that's it. But you realize, I mean, you'll scroll on your phone for 15 minutes, you know, it doesn't really feel like a lot. And sometimes it feels counterintuitive, because the old school way of working is you wake up, you rush in, you get everything done. And then, you know, you go home and you switch off and whatever. But now I'm like, it feels stupid, because you're like, I've got so much to do. Why am I spending 15 minutes closing my eyes doing nothing? But you invest that 15 minutes in the morning, and if the rest of your day is 10% more efficient because you did that, then overall, you know, you're onto a winner. So only 15 minutes, and it feels counterintuitive, but think of it as an investment into your productivity. And for me, it's phenomenal. It's amazing.
When do you do that? I know you said the morning, but
I do it when I wake up. I'll try and do it first. Like, I'll wake up, make morning coffee, and I'll sit and do it there and then. Sometimes it's not as easy as that. You have to rush out, whatever. If I have to do it after training, then I will. But I'm getting it done. Even if I have to come into work and sit in a phone booth, I'm getting it done. You know, I do prioritize it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Do you think that's helped you when you're training?
I think it's probably less so with the training. I think more so it's helped us so much with work. It's really like, and that's why I started it, I think. It's just because you have to, I just don't have time to be like flapping.
It helps with clarity and just productivity, I think, throughout the day as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than just kind of like feeling always like on the back foot or always like scattered, it just like helps, I think, really center yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can, like, I think you can do more and you can get more out of your day.
You know, it has helped with sitting in the sauna or being in the cold plunge, because you're not on your phone, it's quite mindful, you close your eyes. And, you know, as before, your mind would wander and you'd think, oh, what am I having for dinner tonight? Now I'm like, no, just, you know, just ground yourself. And you think of some of these meditative practices while you're doing that, which is quite cool as well.
Well, I think one thing that's really important that I've taken from that is that, I mean, we go on about it quite a lot, which is that, you know, you can take 15 minutes out for yourself, and the impact of that on your future self is so vast. And everybody is moving so quick and, you know, I don't have time to do a workout, or I don't have time to do a meditation, or, you know, life's moving so fast. But that 15 minutes can make the rest of the day so much more manageable. Especially like if I exercise in the morning, as an example, I'll have a much more consistent energy throughout the day than I would if I don't. Like, by the time it's 2 o'clock, if I don't exercise, I'm crashing and burning. But at the same time, you know, with what you're saying when it comes to meditation, it's giving you a bit more clarity, isn't it? And if your brain is feeling a lot more organized, then it's less processing time. It's more energy. That's less energy if you've processed everything. That gives you more time to be focused on other things.
100%. 100%. And I think I would say anyone that's like, I don't have time, I would say look at your screen time on your iPhone. And most people's screen time is embarrassing. Most people don't talk about what their screen time is because it's that bad. Yeah. If you can spend 4 hours scrolling on your phone, you can do 15 minutes of meditation or 15 minutes of exercise or even an hour of just focusing on you. You know, it's not about having the time. It's about prioritizing your time.
Well, on that, something that you did mention, which is something that we also wanted to speak to you about, was your sauna and cold plunging and contrast therapy. And you touched upon it there where, you know, it's your meditations helps you within those areas. But like, tell us your experience of contrast therapy.
Well, so I found it, I tried it for the first time, a similar time around when I was doing the breathwork stuff. And it was just something to do, really. So I thought I'd give it a go. And I did it and it was painful and it was hard. But I was like, you know, it's quite a nice way of hanging out with your mates, or whatever. And I remember I was up in Collingwood and I left. I was traveling back to Richmond and I was on a scooter, like a Lime scooter, the rental thing. And some girl was walking past on the street and she was looking at me smiling. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I realized I was singing Oasis out loud because that's what I was Amazing. Listening to. I was like, I am in such a good mood right now. I was so happy. And then I got home and I was like, oh my God, that was phenomenal. So then I bought a pack and I was like, I was just in. I was so in. And I think I bought 5 sessions and I used them all in like 4 days. I went twice one day. I just hammered it. Obviously bought a membership and I was there every day, obsessed with it. That's been really, it was a really fortunate experience that I had because it led on to, you know, where we are now with the business and meet my business partner and where we're at with all that stuff. It's been a huge, you know, that was one of those life defining moments of what I found, just not just from a personal perspective, but because it's sort of led into what I do for a living as well.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's very, very simple. And it's just turning up. It's doing like 15 minutes in the sauna, which, you know, saunas and bathhouses have been around for thousands of years. You know, ancient Rome, the Japanese, the Greek, everyone has been doing bathhouses for a long time.
Yeah.
So it's nothing revolutionary as far as that's concerned. But it does show that it's a social thing where people get together, they hang out, they talk shit, they talk business, they make friends. You know, at Project Mood, people come on dates. You know, it's a very social thing. So that's a huge benefit of it, is that it brings people together and you chat to one another. And then in terms of the contrast therapy stuff, there's so much science behind the benefits of it. The dopamine increases, the way that, you know, your brain reacts to it, the activation of your nervous systems. And I'm far from a scientist, and we don't really get too bogged down in the science of Project Mood, other than, you know, you do a cold plunge, and you do a sauna, you feel amazing. It's a real sort of reset to your nervous system. So, that along with exercise, along with the community side of things, is really just a massive feel good boost, and that's really what Project Mood is all about. We say we're here to build your mood, and we want to lift the mood of Melbourne, and it's really around our philosophy around that. It's just feeling good. That's why I found it. That's why I loved it, and that's why we do it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And with when it comes to sauna specifically, you've had a bit of a life altering improvement.
Yeah. So the stats on sauna usage, especially in men, is just like, it's staggering. It's like it's the reduction in all cause mortality for, you know, using it 3 or 4 times a week. It's a reduction of like 40%. It's bonkers. And just with my own training, on a sort of physical level, my heart rate is like, I used to run between 160 and 170. And then when I started hitting the sauna 3 or 4 times a week, That's reduced now to, you know, probably an average pace of like 130, 135. So, you know, a significant reduction as far as heart rate is concerned. And I think just from my general fitness levels, because my heart is beating so low and it's just beating much more efficiently, and it's becoming much more efficient when my body's in heat, I'm just finding longer distance stuff just so much easier. It's really, really helped. And there's a lot of studies out there as well in terms of sauna usage for endurance athletes. And I think the study is that that 3 uses a week for 6 weeks, they saw a 30% reduction in time to exhaustion in these athletes, which is just like, it's significant. You know, this is not yeah. small fry. It's a huge thing.
It's actually 35%.
Is it really?
Yeah, which is even more impressive. And then the reason why I say it is we've touched upon this before. One of my number one fears is just having a cardiac arrest. And it was
probably
only because
salt intake.
Yeah, yeah. But it was because of that Ironman that I got put in the back of an ambulance, and they were really telling me, you know, you need to get your heart checked, and I didn't get it checked for ages.
So how long do you reckon you need to spend in a sauna? Like, is it 15 minutes or is it an hour?
It will depend on the temperature of the sauna, but you know, you should go. You know, don't pass out in there. But you know, if you're new to it, just 10 minutes. If you're a pro, you know, build up to 20. Some people do more than 20.
Okay, so not long.
I like this morning, I didn't have much time. I did 15 minutes, and then I did a 3-minute cold plunge. Then I was out, which is like 18 minutes. It's really, you know, you can be in and out. Other times you'll do a few cycles, spend the whole hour in there. So it's very dependent on the person. In Finland, which coincidentally is the happiest country in the world, and they also have more saunas than anywhere else in the world. They've got more saunas than cars in Finland, which is not a coincidence. They have them quite low. Their saunas are actually like lower than average, and it's because, so they'll spend 40 minutes in a sauna because it's more of a social thing for them. They want to
like
sit in there.
Like 45 degrees?
No, a bit hotter than that. I think you should fact check this, but I think 70, around 70, 80. You know, whereas at Project Mood, for example, we're at 95, I think. We're on the top. We're on the sort of, we're not the highest in the city, but we're pretty high.
Pretty high.
That soak was 110.
Yeah.
And I was soaked.
Yeah.
It's the only way you could describe it. It was embarrassing.
Yeah. Where I was. It's so down to preference, you know. I think in Australia, people are used to the heat a lot more here. So my preference is slightly lower than 95, but you know, we actually put it down a couple of weeks ago, and a couple of people were like, it's not hot enough. So you sort of have to, like, it's all down to the customer base, really, in preference. I'm sure if you go to the Middle East, they'd love it even hotter. You know, it just depends on what they like.
What would you say your top 5 tips for people that are looking to start getting into contrast therapy? Could be 3. I know 5's quite a lot.
It's quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Top three tips.
Top 3 tips for contrast therapy specifically.
Yeah.
I think going back to the, don't put too much pressure on yourself. It's not that deep. You know, you can come, if you just get your ankles in the first time, fine. If then you progress to your knees, that's fine as well. You know, don't put too much pressure on it. Focus on this 1% improvements. It's not that, you know, it's just you in there. No one's watching. It's fine. Secondly, go with some mates. It's so much more fun when you're with people. Unless you want to have a bit of a sort of switch off time, it's also good for that. But I would, especially if it's your first time, go with some friends because it makes it quite fun. And then number 3, I would say, I would say have a plan. You know, if you're, there's different ways, there's different reasons people use the bathhouse and Project Mood. Some people just want to come because they want to just hang out with their mates. So this is probably less so for those people. But if you're coming because you want to do contrast therapy with intention, have a plan.
Yeah.
So, and we provide a plan for you on the wall if you need it. But if you know, whether you use ours or you use your own, whatever, but have a plan. So say, I want to do 15 minutes in the sauna. I want to do 3 in the cold. Then I'm going to go into the hot magnesium pool for 8 minutes. And then I'm going to do the steam, whatever it is. But just know what you're going to do, because if you set yourself that target when you're in the sauna, you're going to be looking at the clock and you are going to hold yourself more accountable than if you just say, I'm going to get in and I'm going to get out when it's hot.
Yeah.
Set yourself a target and have a plan.
I like nice. That. I went to a place recently with a friend, and I think we ended up spending about 2 hours in the magnesium bath, and then that was it because we were just chatting and lost track of time. So I think that's really good advice.
Yeah. And so some people, that's what they use it for, you know, and that's fine. I think it's funny because we're at Project Mood, we don't market it as a recovery center. We don't market it as a wellness center. It's just a social space. It is whatever you want it to be. You know? And I've been in there with mates before, and we've not done contrast therapy. We just hung out, and that's fine. So you know, it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, I go from the sauna to the hot bath, and then back to the sauna and avoid that cold plunge, like you would believe. Last question for you know, we've got people that are just looking to get into exercise. Some people are starting out again. But my last final question for you is, if you could leave listeners with one piece of advice to give them to keep them moving, what would it be?
I would say, habits over goals. I'm going to sort of mix it with two. The other one is find your why. Understand. Why is it that you're doing what you're doing? And if it's because I want to lose a bit of weight, I'm talking very generally here, but that's not good enough. You can say, I want to lose a bit of weight because my self-esteem is a bit low. That's a bit stronger. But not because you want to look good I just don't think that's strong enough. I think you need to look a bit more internally and find out why is it that you're training. Don't just think that exercise is just something that you do as a chore. You know, go slightly more internal. What is it that drives you? What is it that pushes you? And then when things do get tough, you go back to that thing, and that's what will spur you on. So I think try and this is difficult. It's not easy to do, but try and like associate exercise with something internal that really, really is important to you, and that will stop you from falling off. It will keep you motivated, and it will get you the results that you want, even if you're not working towards them.
Yeah. Absolutely love that.
That's so great. I feel like that's, I think we've all learned something here today.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been awesome.
Yeah. It's been really nice having you. Well, that was Lewis. And join us next time for more fun. Thanks. Goodbye.
Cheers, guys.